Before we get into today's show, I have an urgent update to share with you. As you probably know, this podcast is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. And with our financial year ending on June 30th, we're facing a $52,000 gap in funding that must be closed by this date. With just days to go, generous friends of the ministry have now offered to match every dollar given towards this goal up to $10,000. So please take a moment today to give your best gift at premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/CS Lewis. Thank you for understanding how important your gift is today and for giving generously. And now it's time for today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Hello and welcome back to the show. It's Justin Brierley bringing you seven of C.S. Lewis's significant apologetics and devotional Christian works with Alistair McGrath in this current season of the podcast. Today, exploring the Screwtape Letters, published in 1942. They essentially saw C.S. Lewis rise to international prominence as an author. He was on the cover of things like Time magazine after the publication of this book. We'll be talking about his creative approach to conversion, temptation, and the Christian life in this absolute classic. As I mentioned last time, some exciting news. We have a new online home for the podcast. You can now go to premierunbelievable.com and see all of what we're producing from Unbelievable. Some great other shows that if you haven't discovered yet, you'll find there. Unbelievable, Ask N.T. Wright Anything, The Matters of Life and Death podcast with John and Tim Wyatt. And we've got some exciting new shows in the pipeline as well, which we'll be announcing at our Unbelievable conference in May. But if you want to register for our newsletter for updates on the show, you'll get a free ebook if you do that as well. Do check it out, premierunbelievable.com. You can even support the show from there as well. Alistair is one of our keynote speakers at Unbelievable Conference as well. Now only 5 weeks away and 4 key sessions at the conference. Really excited about our theme this year as we help the church find its authentic voice again amidst the culture wars. So we're going to be looking at how to find our voice again in the midst of cancel culture, identity politics, everything else. Some really interesting talks and panel discussions going on around that, speaking life into the spheres of art, science, education, global justice, and also telling our story, really practical ways to share Christ with grace and truth in a divided culture. So go and check out all of the speakers, including Alistair, Lisa Fields, Glenn Scrivener, Sharon Dirks, Joseph D'Souza, Calvin Robinson, Jeff Vines, John Wyatt, Phil Vischer, and Sky Jatani. We've got a big lineup, as well as our big conversation event the very same evening. Not to be missed this year. You can come in person or online from anywhere in the world. We're doing it at a time that's especially helpful to our US listeners too. We're even offering the option to attend a screening at some churches that are doing that around in the US and Canada. So do check that out, unbelievable.live, and the link to our new ministry page as well from today's show. Let's get into today's conversation. Hello and welcome back to this week's edition of the podcast. We're looking at some of Lewis's major works in sort of chronological order in this season of the podcast with Alistair. We've already looked at Pilgrim's Regress, the Problem of Pain, and today we're looking at The Screwtape Letters, which is one of Lewis's best loved works in many ways. And as you've said on last week's podcast, Alistair, really it was his breakthrough book, wasn't it? Tell us how this book came to be written, first of all.
Well, the story behind this book is really interesting. Lewis went to his local church in Oxford, Holy Trinity Headingley Quarry, and in July 1940, he was sitting through what seems to have been a very dull sermon, and his mind wandered, and he began to play around with this idea of telling about temptation, not from our side of the story, but from the other side of the story. And it just captured his imagination. He went home really excited because he wanted to get on with this. And he actually began to write these Screwtape Letters. There were 31 of them for a weekly church magazine called The Guardian. And what's nice is they're all short letters. and they're all about the same length. So actually, it's a very nice, very manageable format. And basically, what happened was that these got noticed. And Ashley Sampson, in fact, who commissioned The Problem of Pain, read these letters and thought, hey, these need to be published. So basically, that's what happened. They were picked up and published as Screwtape Letters in 1942.
There you go. I hadn't realised that they were, first of all, though, had this life as a just as a column, effectively, in a church. So obviously Lewis sort of had this brainwave during a sermon, and it goes to show even boring sermons have their value in God's economy. But he'd had this brainwave, and did he then approach the newspaper and saying, I've got an idea for a column?
I think he did, followed through on with this series of letters. I don't think he really thought of this becoming a book, but certainly others had ideas. But I think as you rightly say, I mean, very often people will say, well, sermons stimulate us in all kinds of ways. And perhaps this is an example of one way in which sermons stimulate us in unexpected ways.
Absolutely. It gives you thinking time, doesn't it, if you're not really concentrating. I've actually got a rather lovely sort of slightly older edition of the book here with me. This was published by Fontana Books. And if you look closely, it says 3 and 6 in the corner. And this was a 1964 edition, or 1965 edition of the book. There's a rather lovely inscription, though, and I can't remember how it came down to me or where I picked it up secondhand somewhere. But it's got an inscription to Timothy Warham, confirmed in Selby Abbey on the 29th of June 1965 by Douglas Selby, as far as I can tell, after preparation with, and I can't make out the name of the person who prepared this person for confirmation. But anyway, obviously it was deemed a suitable sort of confirmation gift in the 1960s. And it was phenomenally popular, wasn't it, at the time of its publication? Why do you think it became so popular so quickly, this particular book?
Well, the chapters are all very short. The framework that's used, the kind of senior tempter and his apprentice, is brilliant. It's just so original. It's very, very witty, and people just loved it. And also, I mean, Lewis packs a lot of interesting reflection into those letters, and makes it very, very accessible, much more so than some of his more academic books. So really, it was a kind of breakthrough book in that it was really helpful to a lot of people, really original, and people really picked up on them in a big way.
And in a way, I suppose the thing that's really marks it out is that very creative way in which Lewis, the device he uses of using, you know, the senior devil corresponding with his junior underling. And the way that works itself out means everything has to be reversed. Good becomes evil, evil becomes good, you know, and so on. And that's just quite fun, isn't it? It's literally just that device alone, I think, almost carries the book along, because people quite enjoy having to sort of get their head around the idea that, you know, everything is reversed in the world of these demons and devils.
It's a very original framework, and it works. I think that's the really important thing. It makes sense. And you've got to bear in mind that in many ways what Lewis was doing is saying, look, traditionally we've had lots of books that tell Christians how to deal with temptation, and that they're very worthy and they're very dull, but here is something different. This uses an imaginative framework to allow you to visualize this problem in a new way, and when you do that, you see it immediately. It makes much more sense. I think that's one of the reasons why people loved it. It was just original. It was a fresh angle on a traditional problem. And actually, you know, the funny thing is that the advice Lewis is giving through the book is really very traditional, but it's the way he does it. It's completely new. So in effect, it freshens things up enormously. I think that's much, much better.
And I think that's why it's had a life, you know, beyond the normal audience that you might say a Christian book, you know, of this type might normally have. And you've had, you know, it's been so popular even, you know, in relatively secular audiences. I know that for instance, John Cleese has, you know, done a narration of it and that sort of thing. I think it's because it's great fun, you know, just the central premise of the book is rather fun. And Lewis, you know, in that way, he's done a tremendous service, I think, with something like the Screwtape Letters in really taking those ideas and putting them in a really public setting, hasn't he?
He has. And I think, you know, he engages some very traditional problems. One of the most interesting bits, in my view, is where Screwtape tells his apprentice to get to work on his patient's experiences and make him feel that Christianity can't be really true. And, you know, in effect, it is a brilliant way of saying, look, don't rely on experience too much. But the way of saying, look, Screwtape is using this as a strategy to unravel your faith is brilliant. And that's why so many people like it. The advice Lewis gives is good, but it's given, but you assess it by its impact on Screwtape. So it's really, really a very good way of helping us to think through issues of temptation and the problems we experience.
I was going to say, and that in that sense, he helps you to see temptation from the other side, so to speak. It's often, you know, Christian writers often use it to focus our own role in temptation, but seeing it from that other side. I mean, to what extent do you think this is just a device that Lewis is using, and how much did he really genuinely think there was this sort of spiritual battle there really are, you know, malign spiritual forces trying to use things to tempt people into various ways? Is that the way Lewis really would have conceived this kind of battle going on, as it were, in the spiritual dimension?
Well, we need to bear in mind that Lewis specialized in the literature of the Middle Ages. And this kind of way of thinking would have been natural in the Middle Ages. And that is really part of what Lewis is doing. He's almost taking a medieval way of looking at things and updating it and moving it to the present and then helping us to see, for example, what happens when we rely too much on experience. So I think Lewis himself probably thinks this is absolutely right. But of course, there's a long history of thinking of temptation in this way. So if you like, Lewis is taking a framework of discussing this, which he knows very, very well from his professional career, but he's inverting it, you know, and saying, let's just flip it around and see what it looks like. And actually, it's really helpful. So it's very interesting because to me, it illustrates how Lewis, the literary scholar, is able to draw on precedents, which really make for a very, very good story and use it profitably.
Now, you know, typically when it comes to how to ward off temptation and live a more sort of unified Christian life, a lot of writers might, you know, encourage people to go back to prayer and reading the Bible and so on. Lewis, though, does place a lot of emphasis on the role of evidence and argument in defending faith against temptation. Why does he sort of go in that direction particularly?
It goes in that direction because Lewis is concerned that there are various forms of popular piety which do rest a lot on the way in which you feel. You know, I don't feel God is there, or I do feel God is there. And Lewis, I think, has clearly had some bad experiences along these lines. And what he wants to say is, you don't rely on your subjective perceptions of reality. You try and let evidence and you know, reason thinking to guide you here. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, for example, in the Chronicles of Narnia, time and time again, you know, what is the evidence for this? You know, and it's a very important point, you know, in trying to work out, for example, who's the goody and who's the baddie in the Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. You know, it's about evidence. What does the evidence suggest? I think what Lewis is really saying is two things. Number one, the evidence is on the Christian side. I think he wants to make that point very, very clearly. But secondly, there is a danger that we get locked into very subjective, very emotional ways of thinking, which simply aren't helpful. We simply drown in our own emotions. And Lewis is suggesting in the narrative of Screwtape that actually this is one way of losing your faith, becoming too entangled with a complex emotional situation.
I think there's a scene, isn't there, where, you know, he's warning Wormwood that, you know, the patient has been studying books which are starting, you know, this is at the beginning of this person's journey towards Christian faith, at the beginning of the book, are starting to persuade them that perhaps there is more than just, you know, the world around us and that God exists and so on. And sort of suggests, you know, things to throw in their path to kind of immediately make them to just think of that as just, oh, that's just, you know, ideas I was having in the library, and now I'm having my lunch and I'm back in the real world. There's a sense in which Lewis wanted to pinpoint the fact that we can tend to divorce the intellect and the things that might lead us towards God from quote unquote real life. And so, I mean, talk a little bit about that and the way that Lewis, what was Lewis trying to do in kind of giving us that lesson, if you like, through Screwtape's attempts at putting these temptations in the path of the individual.
Well, that's a great point. In fact, one of the best examples of this is Lewis's critique of chronological snobbery. And one of the points that Lewis makes time and time again is you can't disregard books because they're old. He makes the point that there's wisdom in the past, we need to engage it. And so what Screwtape does, and you can see the way in which Screwtape is kind of way based a bit on Lewis, what Screwtape does is to try and get his patient to think, hey, this is an old book. That's a New Testament. It can't be right. You know, we've moved on since then. We're modern. And if you like, it's all about trying to persuade the patient that he simply believes a lot of old junk from the past, and we're in the present now, so it can't be right. And actually, Lewis himself will make those points in a much more detailed way elsewhere. But it's a brilliant, short, popular presentation of that key point.
I mean, when this young man does eventually actually become a Christian, which is of course a crushing, you know, disappointment for Screwtape and Wormwood in this book, but when he does, he's introduced to church and all the sort of disappointment that can come with this, you know, because it's a very human institution and the people he's with and so on. So tell us a bit about why Lewis suggests that actually the local church can be a bit of a problem when it comes to, you know, walking through your faith and so on.
Well, let's go back to the point that Lewis conceived this book during a very dull sermon. Now, that might just help us see why, you know, the institution of the church isn't always as helpful to the life of faith as we might like. But I think one of the points that Lewis makes brilliantly is, you know, when you go to a church, you see all these ordinary people, you know, and you kind of, the people you meet in the street. And Screwtape is saying, we've got to use this to kind of way persuade this guy it's no good. And one of the points that Lewis is making is that actually there is a disconnection between our expectations about what the church should be and the very ordinary way it all too often is. And actually, Lewis went to his own church, not to one of the more sophisticated centre churches in Oxford, because he felt that he was embedded in his local community and he would go to the local church. So in effect, the scenes he describes in Screwtape would have been ones he experienced himself at that church. And what Lewis is trying to say is, look, see through the ordinariness of the people to what it is that they have found that makes them extraordinary.
Absolutely. And in that sense, I think Lewis is very good at grounding this in our everyday experience, because I think that's one of the problems sometimes with grand, you know, thinking and theology and apologetics. It can raise us up to a great level, but then we kind of come crashing down when we're actually trying to put it into practice with the, you know, the frustrations that we all experience, you know, with other people and so on. And likewise, you know, he's very down to earth, and one gets a sense that some of Lewis's own struggles with, you know, friends, relatives, Mrs. Moore and so on are sort of being put into the mouth of the patient who's struggling with his rather cantankerous mother and that sort of thing. That these are very kind of normal everyday sorts of problems that are coming up in the life of this person in the book, aren't they?
They are, and I think Lewis scholars very often will have great fun trying to work out, are there people in Lewis's real life who are appearing in a slightly different form in the Screwtape letters. But I think the whole point is that everything hangs together so well. I think that's one of the reasons why the book has simply continued to be so popular, because, it's dated, you know, back in the 1940s, so we need to make allowance for that. Even so, it still speaks to us very, very clearly today. And I think that, you know, it's a very important point to make that you do find yourself in a church community which may disappoint you, but that in effect means you mustn't let Screwtape used that as saying this is simply something uninteresting and unexciting, let's leave it behind. He's saying, no, the important thing is others have captured this vision as well. They've seen something, and that's good. See it that way. And again, one of the themes we've been talking about quite a lot in this set of podcasts is seeing things in a new way, which is the right way. And Screwtape is trying to get his patient to see things in Screwtape's way. And what Lewis is saying is, no, there's another way in which you can see them, and that's much better.
And I often feel like that's one of the things Lewis has helped me with, is to see that a truly mature Christian faith isn't having constant ecstatic experiences in church, you know, and in the Christian life, but it's actually learning to see God and the purposes of God in the very ordinariness and sometimes, you know, frankly, disappointments of life. But the mature response is actually learning to see how God is there when we don't feel, you know, on cloud nine with some super spiritual experience.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think that Lewis clearly has had conversations with people which have brought this point home to him. He's realized this is a problem for a lot of people, and he's found a very good, imaginative and very witty way of actually confronting this issue and just help people to see, look, isn't it great that Christianity is able to connect with ordinary people and make sense to them? And the fact that they are ordinary people does not say the gospel is not extraordinary. It is about the ability of Christianity to connect up with ordinary people. And again, that's a point that Lewis makes quite a lot elsewhere, but it's good to see it made so well in this book.
I think this one's, for me, it's aged quite well. I mean, obviously, there are lots of references that are of their time. You know, it's set during World War II when it was written. But what do you think readers can take away picking it up today in, you know, 2022, Alistair, this book?
Well, Lewis begins the book with a quote about the devil not liking being mocked. And I think it's a very good example of Lewis using wit and humour to, in effect, begin to subvert a lot of traditional atheist apologetics. And I think that's one of the reasons why people like it so much. It's very well written, and it is so witty and humorous. And it allows us to see our spiritual struggles from a different perspective, which really helps us try to make sense of them and figure out what to do about them. So I think actually that was very, very new at the time, but actually it still makes a lot of sense to people. It gives good advice, but the way in which it does it is actually quite unusual. So in effect, it really has been very significant for an awful lot of people. It wasn't, unfortunately, all that good news for Lewis himself, because if you look at the front page, the title page of Screwtape Letters, most printings have, it's written by C.S. Lewis, a fellow of Magdalen College, Oxford. And his other fellows at Magdalen College, Oxford, did not approve of this because they felt it in effect brought them into disrepute. So words were said, I understand.
There you go. Was there a sense that they felt he was maybe using his position as a sort of way to kind of boost his private writing career? Was that the issue at stake?
That was part of it. The other part was, why are you writing this stuff when you're meant to be writing about English literature?
I notice also in this lovely old edition I've got, and I think it's also in later editions, it's the dedication is to J.R.R. Tolkien. Why do you think this specific book was dedicated to Tolkien?
Well, I'm not quite clear why this specific book was dedicated to him, but I know that Lewis had this ongoing sense of debt to Tolkien, and that he dedicated, therefore, one of his earliest books to him. You probably know this, but actually Lewis himself once remarked that Screwtape Letters wasn't actually one of his best books, and Tolkien got to hear about this and felt, you know, why are you dedicating this book you do not think is very good to me? You know? I personally think it was simply this is an early book, and Lewis wanted to make clear he owed a lot to various people, and Tolkien is one of them.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we owe a lot to him in the process. It's certainly to the test of time. A few years ago, I saw a wonderful stage production of it by Max MacLean, which is well worth seeing if you ever get the chance. But Thank you very much for taking us through it on today's edition of the podcast, Alistair. And tell us, what will we be looking at on next week's podcast?
Well, we're going to move on. We're going to look at The Great Divorce, which is one of Lewis's most interesting works. And it's quite interesting just how much Lewis did during the Second World War. If you like, Oxford University was a bit disrupted. Teaching wasn't what it was. Lewis had more time in his hands. And actually, some of his best writings came out of that period. And The Great Divorce is one of those books which people keep coming back to. It's very, very interesting. I'm looking forward to discussing with you quite soon.
So am I. Thank you very much, Alistair. If you want, by the way, more from Alistair and his own writing on Lewis and indeed many other topics as well, alistairmcgrath.net is the place to go. And we'll give you the ways to get in touch with this show as well in just a moment's time. But for now, thanks very much, Alistair, and see you next time.
I look forward to it very much.
Thanks for listening to today's show. As we heard, next time, The Great Divorce. 1945, this one was published. Very unusually told story, really, from the perspective of passengers on a day trip from hell to heaven. Alistair will be explaining how the story and characters drew out Lewis's views on the nature of heaven and hell. Just a reminder, you can get more from the show now at our new show page, premierunbelievable.com. That's our new website for all our shows and resources, articles and more. You can register for our newsletter there and you'll get a free ebook if you do that. Links are with today's show for that. And don't forget, Alistair also a keynote speaker at this year's Unbelievable Conference. Don't miss that. Saturday the 14th of May, unbelievable.live. You can attend from anywhere in the world. For now, God bless and best wishes. See you next time.